Today's podcast is brought to you by the Herzog Foundation. Well, today, a no-holds-barred conversation about what it's like inside a public school in the Chicago suburbs. I'll warn you, it isn't pretty, but it does give us a glimpse into why American children are falling so far behind their contemporaries in other countries. You might be shocked, or our discussion today might just confirm what you've already been thinking about public education in America. Stay with us. This is the Moms for America podcast. Each week, leaders and everyday champions tell personal stories, share advice, and tackle the issues most important to moms. Hi, moms. I'm Debbie Carlitis, your host, and welcome to the Moms for America podcast. I'm so glad that you, mama, that you're joining us again today. Every week we get together to inspire, encourage, and educate moms in their journey through motherhood. All right, let's talk about today's show and today's guest. Gino Young spent 1 year as a substitute teacher in a south suburb of Chicago, and honestly, that was enough for him. He wrote about his experience in his book, Sex, Drugs, and Illiteracy, The Death of Education in America. Well, hey, Gino, welcome to the Moms for America podcast. We love it when the men show up and talk about some of these important issues that are going on in America.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and it's an absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
Well, we both happen to be from the same state. We both know that Chicago has been in the news a lot recently for a plethora of conditions, situations, all kinds of things. But education has always been an issue here in Chicago, as it is across the country. So I want to talk a little bit about your background. You are coming from a very personal space. One, you'll tell us about it, but your mom, you know, was a substitute teacher. You were a substitute teacher. What you saw was shocking to you. And that's really why you now are using your voice to kind of educate and warn. So a little bit about your background. Did you attend public school, or how did you end up engaging in the public school system?
Okay, well, actually, I did not attend public school. I was blessed to attend private school my entire life. My parents put me into Catholic schools because they did not want me in the public school environment, because knowing where we live on the south side of Chicago, I would have been stuck in a few of the worst schools. So they didn't want me in that environment. My father went to Catholic school when he went to school back in the 70s, and so did my mother. So they always wanted something, a cut above for us. So they made those sacrifices. And I mean, they really sacrificed a lot for us, and I appreciate that. So I come from a very musical background as well. My parents, they invested in my brothers and I. I play percussion instruments as well as voice, I sing. And my older brother plays piano and pipe organ and Hammond organ, and my youngest brother plays electric bass. So, we're sort of like the entire rhythm section. So
nice.
So you know, we would always play at church. We come from a very very religious background. My great grandmother, actually, who passed away a couple of years ago, but she lived to be 96. And she was a pastor of a church on the south side of Chicago for over 25 years. So we would play at her church coming up. That was like a forum for us to be able to, you know, shed fears. I was always fearless. But my older brother and my younger brother sometimes wouldn't be quite as fearless. But that was always a space for us, the church, to really get used to using our talents and to praise the Lord. Mm-hmm. And to just become better as musicians. So as the years progressed, I attended St. Rita High School on the South Side. And then after that, I attended St. Xavier University, where I studied political science.
I know them well. Yes.
Oh, yes. And so after all of that ended, I decided when I turned 25, this was around the 2020 election and right after the 2020 election. So when all the foolishness occurred, I decided that I would run for Congress. And, you know, I had never done anything like that before, first time around. And I was 25 years old, and I ended up being the youngest federal candidate anywhere in the state. At 25, I had my name printed on the ballot, and I got nearly 20% of the Republican primary vote, absolutely grassroots, no funding, all by myself. You know, I had some friends that were in it with me, but mainly it was just me and God, and we made it happen.
Okay.
So after that,
how did you end up with substitute teaching, though? So now you're out of school, you're trying to figure out what to do, you're kind of captured by making a political a statement to help. And then after that, which is quite a endeavor, congratulations on that.
Oh,
How did
thank
you
you.
land in substitute teaching?
Well, I landed in substitute teaching because I was working as a private music instructor. So I was doing okay, but I felt that I could be doing more. I felt that I needed to be making more money. And at that time it was Joe Biden's America, the peak of inflation.
Right.
Inflation was like 9 or 10%. So things were really, really things were kind of shaky. So my mother said, you know what? You can make some extra money. You have your credentials. You could become a substitute teacher or a paraprofessional working with special needs kids,
Right.
and you can make some extra money. So, I knew my mother had challenges in that space. I knew children these
And
days
your
were.
mom was a substitute teacher for how long?
Oh, she had been doing it at this point. She had been doing it for maybe almost 7 years. So she
Okay.
started. Yeah, so she had been doing almost a decade. So, but when she, early on, she had a lot of issues. Children would run in and out of the classroom.
Oh,
They
I'm
would, you know,
sure.
they would swear, curse her out like she was just a person on the
Yeah.
street. And these are like 14, 15-year-old kids. My mother actually was carjacked at Hillcrest High School in Country
Wow.
Club Hills. A young man, she was outside in the car just right before the morning, getting herself ready, eating her breakfast, and a young man tapped on the window, and she looked, and he had a gun, pointed it into her head, told her to get out the car, and ended up stealing the car that my grandfather
Wow, how
left
frightening.
them. Oh, it was horrifying.
Thank God she's okay.
Yeah,
So you're seeing a lot of South Side Chicago challenges already
Oh, yes.
because you're included in that community, which we know every community has its challenges, whether it's, South Side of Chicago or LA, right?
Absolutely.
Everybody's got challenges. So
Yes.
now you decide to go substitute teach. And what was your ex? And a lot of people do this, Gino, right? They have a degree, they have their education. I know a lot of moms have gone back and substitute teach for extra money. We'll see this all across America. And substitute teaching, we know, is a challenge,
Yes,
obviously.
it is.
Any of us that even were a student way back in the day, it's tough for the substitute teachers. But this culture, this generation, this is what's happening is really tough. What were you expecting?
Well, my mother, she sort of gave me a crash course. So I was expecting it to get rough, but I never in a billion years could have expected what I ended up seeing. So my very first day substitute teaching, I was given a laptop and just a crash course of what to expect by one of the sub coordinators at a school that I was working at that time. And she just essentially just put me into the classroom, didn't teach me how to take attendance, didn't even tell me how to really turn the computer on. And I ended up marking, and it's a funny story I get into in my book. I ended up marking the entire class hospitalized because I thought HP meant here present and it meant hospitalized. I had like 10 kids get up and say, I'm not hospitalized. I'm like, what's
Wow, all of a sudden
going
the ambulances were
on?
coming. Who knows?
Yes.
Okay, so no setup. All of a sudden
None.
you're there in the school,
Yes.
and you start your substitute teaching, which I'm sure there was a lot of opportunity because people are always taking off or there's leave of absence. So do you regularly substitute teach? And tell us a little bit about the school that you're substitute teaching at.
Okay, well, when I was doing it, I'm just to let everyone know I'm not in that space anymore because it was so
Right.
bad I had to leave. But so the main school that I ended up substitute teaching at was Hillcrest High School, and it's a part of a school system, Bremen 228 here in Illinois, and it consists of Oak Forest High School, Tinley Park High School, Bremen High School, and then Hillcrest High School. Of all those schools, Hillcrest is the lowest ranked school. Its demographics is predominantly black. The area that is in Country Club Hills actually used to be a very nice area to live, but unfortunately, when they decided to tear down a lot of the affordable housing, the Chicago projects, for those of you who know, those are very infamous, Cabrini-Green, Robert Taylor Homes, Aldergill Gardens. When they destroyed those in the early 2000s, they disbanded that system and relocated all those people out to the south suburbs. So now that entire area, almost 20 years later, the demographic has changed and the school system has changed because of that. So now, inside of the school system, I saw a lot of kids that were completely disengaged. The administrators were really beholden to the children. The children were essentially running the school, and the teachers were afraid to really speak out. A lot of the teachers that I mentioned in my book, when they would speak to me on how they were truly feeling, they would sort of speak in a really whispery tone because they didn't want anyone to hear. They didn't want the administrators to hear. So the teachers were more afraid of the deans and the administrators than the students were. And it's like the entire education ecosystem was sort of flipped on its head and upside down.
Yeah.
And that's one of the first things that I noticed, that there's zero accountability whatsoever.
Well, let's kind of dive into that a little bit. And when you say that the students were disengaged and probably coming from a lot of complicated situations, to say it nicely.
Absolutely.
They're bringing their problems to the school,
Yes.
and then the school then becomes the disciplinarian, the counselor, all of these things, right? The social, the social platform for the kids to even engage and learn, the educators, and then what you saw, and the kids are a situation to be had. But I
Yes.
think what you're saying is that the upper administration was maybe part of the problem, according to your book, that they weren't really helping the kids, they were pacifying the
They
children.
were. They were absolutely. On the first day of entry into the school, I worked at Hillcrest. They tell the kids, we don't give F's in this school. We give E's because no one in this school is capable of failure. And I thought that was such a perverse thing because I don't care who you are in your life, whether you're the richest man in the world, the poorest man in the world, we have all failed at something. And failure is good because it gives us a time to step back, reassess, get the chess pieces together, and say, okay, this didn't work, but let's now move in this direction and I'll forge my own path and make sure that I can do better next time. But from day one, they're told that they cannot fail. They also a lot of the teachers were afraid to tell me, but they told me that the administration would go in and change the children's grades. Like at the end of the year, if the child was failing, they would change the child's grade because they didn't want the school to lose funding. They didn't want their rankings to go down, and they would change their grade. And they would just go out of their way to satiate the kids in any number of ways. And also, they would validate and affirm all types of craziness. I tell one crazy story in the book where there's one child who identified as a two-spirit vampire and as a woman. Now he's a boy, but he identified as a vampire, a woman, and a two-spirit. And the school ran with it, and no one, no one said anything. No one could say anything. And
Did the parents can weigh in
I
any of this, I guess? I guess they were okay with,
They were probably okay with it. I would say they were
but
okay with it. And
okay.
unfortunately, a lot of the parents that I encountered through teachers that worked there were very disengaged. They viewed the school as sort of like daycare. They just
Right.
drop them off, and they were like, you know, this is my 8 hours to myself to do God knows what with God knows who. You all don't even call me. Like the parents would get so upset if the teachers or the administrators or deans even called them. It was almost like an affront to them, like you were impeding on their downtime.
There's so many problems when we look at this situation. It's so frustrating
Yes.
because you've got parents that have given up,
Yes.
right? Then you've got students who have now think that they are something that they're not. They think that they're going to rule the roost, and it doesn't matter. There's no respect for authority. There's no honor for teachers. There's no interest in learning. Again, this is not everyone. This is not every parent. This is not every child.
No.
And then you have an administration that is pacifying, and they kind of want to make sure they get their money, get their ranking. And then you've got
Absolutely.
teachers, right, that are frustrated and terrified.
Yeah.
And again, this is not all, but this is a lot of the things that you saw. So when let's go back to the F's and the E's. When someone doesn't fail, I know you talked about it, everyone gets a trophy, right? It's the same
Yes.
thing. We're not setting any standards for achievement. We're not sending, when you tell someone an F is okay or failing is okay, then they strive for that. Why try to be better if it doesn't matter?
Absolutely. And that's one thing that I noticed early on. Meritocracy, any modicum of meritocracy is dead. It's completely dead and buried in these schools, particularly the schools that I worked in. Even just down to attendance, the most basic thing, putting your butt in the seats, so to speak. On just an interesting story, on the week of Thanksgiving in 2024, they thought that it was a good idea at Hillcrest High School to essentially bribe their children to show up for school. Now, they're only 3 days. Now, we all know Thanksgiving week is short. It's only 3 days. If you showed up 2 out of the 3 days, they were giving away $5 Dunkin' Donuts gift certificates. So, and then a prize at the end of the week. So they were essentially bribing
Wow.
kids just to show up and put their behinds in a seat. And my brother told me this year, because he's still working in that medium, in that system rather, he told me this
Wow.
year they gave away a color television, like a flat screen television. To any student who had perfect attendance from August until December, they were giving away like a huge flat screen.
All right, moms, right after this short break, we'll continue our discussion with Gino about all of his experiences as a substitute teacher in Chicago. Hi, moms. I'm excited to share some news about our new sponsor, the Herzog Foundation. We know you're passionate about raising patriots and empowering your children with the best education possible. And the Herzog Foundation shares that passion. They're dedicated to promoting liberty through education freedom and helping parents like you choose the best educational path. They offer a powerhouse of resources designed to support families and schools alike. Whether you're ready to dive in headfirst to the world of education or simply looking for more ways to empower your child's learning. From free training events to their must-read online publication, The Lion, they're committed to keeping you informed about what's happening in education. Also, if you've ever thought, moms, about starting your own Christian school or co-op, their School Box online course will give you everything you need to get started on the right foot. Again, we are so proud to partner with the Herzog Foundation, and we encourage you to explore all their amazing tools and the insights that they offer. So go ahead, visit herzogfoundation.com to learn more. You won't want to miss these incredible resources. Again, find it all out at herzogfoundation.com. All right, welcome back, moms. Before we continue with our interview, please like, subscribe, and share our podcast. This is how we get our information out. This is how we let moms know what's happening, like today, in the public school system. So please like, share, and subscribe. Also, if you have an idea for the podcast, would you please email me at podcast@momsforamerica.net? I would love to hear from you. And lastly, I want to invite all of our moms listening, please join us here at Moms for America. We surely hope that you're a part of our movement. By the way, I want to tell you about Town Square, which is a new platform for our membership, for our members to connect, to share and discuss. It's like a whole community on our website. And again, it's called Town Square. It's moms like us all across the country uniting together to fight for faith, family, freedom, and the Constitution. Again, please go to momsforamerica.us. Join the movement. Take advantage of all the incredible information and a very, very powerful community that will help you on your journey through motherhood. All righty, now back to today's show. What do you think that school could have done and should have done? And I'm sure that you had spoken up and tried to be a light there mm-hmm. with the kids, with the teachers, with the administration, because that's a tough scene on every level over there.
Absolutely. So the very first thing they could have, that they need to do is discipline. There has to be a standard. Children need to know that they don't have choices. There is not a choice for you to come into a room and decide whether or not today you want to do your work, or even whether or not today you want to sit in the classroom at all, because students would get up and frequently leave the door, leave the classroom, and they would do, I would call it the bathroom thing, where this one would go to the bathroom, then that one, sort of like a train, they try to, ditch and go in and out of the classroom. And also I noticed that students would come in, students that didn't even belong in the classroom would be in the classroom. So you would have to look at your roster. If it said you have 15 kids and you count up that you have 25 kids, that means 10 people shouldn't even be in that room. So as substitutes, we always had to keep our head on a swivel, because the children, since there was no accountability, no discipline from the top discipline office, the children were always a step ahead of us, because they knew that most
they knew the game.
Right, they knew the game. They knew that most substitutes were checked out. So on that issue, it has to be discipline. For the teachers, one thing that many of the substitutes that we would raise in the meetings that we would have is that the teachers needed to leave actual assignments, because many of the teachers would just leave. If they weren't there that day, they wouldn't even leave a lesson plan. So the children would take advantage of that, and it was chaos. It was absolute pandemonium, because the children knew that there was no discipline and that there was no work even expected of them. So they wouldn't even try, and they'd be throwing around pencils, playing all types of perverse games. And I get into it in my book. Some things are probably too graphic for me to even describe in this conversation in polite company, but I unfortunately had the unfortunate experience of witnessing a sex act occur in a classroom that I was teaching no more than 15 feet away from me. And there were only 7 kids in the class that day, because most of the kids were out on a field trip. Wow. And a girl decided to perform a sex act on a boy in that room. And once again, I reported it to the dean's office. I wrote up a report. I freaked out. And when it happened, I lost it. And I freaked out, and the bell rang. I went straight
well,
to the
yeah,
dean's
that would
office.
Be completely shocking and horrific.
Oh yeah, it was horrific. And I went to the dean's office, and I told them all about it. And I wrote up a report, I got called down maybe about 45 minutes later to give an official statement to the two deans in the office. And when I explained it, one of the deans, she had like this Lucille Ball look on her face, and she just said, "Oh, well, we've never had anything like that happen before in this school." And I looked at her, and then I looked at the other dean, and he was just sort of looking down because he knew that was a lie, because he knew that the year prior, unfortunately, two or three kids decided to shoot a sex tape in the basement of the school, and they attempted to airdrop it to the entire school, but he intercepted the video before it could go out. So this has happened before. There have been all types of depraved acts that have happened in this particular school that I detail in the book. Once again, I can't get into it; it's too graphic. But and they knew
And
that
this
these
is what
things.
happens when you let
Yes.
children need boundaries.
Yes, absolutely.
That's the best way to raise children. In fact, all of us need boundaries. There
Absolutely.
are rights, there are wrongs, there are absolutes. And when you say, oh, this, and we've seen this in so many things from all the agendas, all the indoctrination in this culture, from abortion to marriage to everything. When you say, oh, we'll move the line a little bit here, all of a sudden it goes from here out of the gate. And when they know, and it's just it's terrible, this culture, because there are no absolutes. Everything is interpretive.
Yes.
Everything is as you feel and as you design it to be, which is not reality. We know that. So now you also say something here that I wanted to bring up. You also talked about it being very almost like demonic, like there was a heavy spirit over
Yes.
this generation when you were trying to teach them.
Absolutely. Coming from a religious background, I could feel just when I would enter a room, the way they would look, they would, laugh, they would snicker, because there's this caricature in the culture of what a black male is supposed to carry himself as. And when they would see me, it was sort of like that was an affront to them, and it was an affront to like everything that they, particularly the boys. I mean, the girls were, they could go there as well, but particularly the young men were very put off by what they saw. And the way I carried myself, the way my brother carried myself, the way we spoke, we spoke actual English, not Ebonics or whatever you want to call it. And they were very, they were very upset about that. And I can recall one time I was trying to figure it out, what is it? And a substitute, it was an older lady. She looked at me and she said, "You know what it is about you?" She said, "The kids, they can see the light in you, and the light in you, it terrifies and angers the demon within them." And I thought that was such a powerful way that she put it, very apt, the way that she put that. And it was very unfortunate, but that's how they felt. Anytime we would walk in a room, the disrespect was palpable. And it comes from the top down, because even just walking the hallways, the administrators, they would look on us with such disgust. It's like the substitutes were the lowest man on the totem pole. It was like, well, you all are expendable. If you do anything, we're just going to get rid of you, because you're essentially like a private contractor. You come and go as you please, so you're not even beholden to a union. So we can treat you any old type of way.
Right. Speaking of unions, I know that's another huge problem within the
Oh, yeah.
education system. So I guess we all know that the unions have just completely they're running the roost on all this stuff too. But you could feel that roll off even to you. But on the other hand, you know what? They need substitute teachers,
They do.
because you are very important as an employee, because that school has to have an adult in that room that's certified. But the other thing that you brought up earlier, Gina, I wanted to go back to, is the fact that bribing the kids for the television, I mean, that is just crazy. And
Yes.
if the kids don't come to school, they lose money every day. And that was another thing with like COVID and all this stuff. There's what? I mean, the kids here, I don't know, in school, is it like $21,000, $22,000 per child
Oh yeah.
a year? And so their money's attached to our kids, money's attached to that school. So they've got to get the kids there. They've got to get them. They want them through and educated and graduated, because then their rate goes up. Get into that a little bit more about the money aspect of this.
Okay, and when I was researching for the book, that's actually one of the most interesting things that I came across, was the monetary aspect and how they're sort of gaming the system with that. To send a child to school in the state of Illinois, it costs approximately $21,000. This is for just a standard educated child. But what I found, and this is what was so disturbing, I found that if a child is classified as a special needs child or an IEP, it goes up to 41,000. So
Sure
it
does.
doubled. So what we've seen, and there have been studies on this, is that a lot of schools across the country are now reclassifying students as special needs or IEPs that shouldn't even be there. And they're also reclassifying students as AP advanced placement students so that they can game the system and get more money. And I thought that that was such a terrible thing because now when I would enter into those classrooms, I would see students in AP classes that were cutting up. And I was like, there's no way this is an advanced placement student. I knew AP kids when I was in high school. There's no way this is an advanced placement class. And it was the same deal in the special needs classes where, and the saddest part is that there are children out there who need that special help. But if you place 10 more kids in the room, now you're diluting the system, diluting the pool, and it's going to be harder and harder for those children to get the help that they need. And my brother witnessed this earlier this school year when he was in a classroom. And these were the epitome of the COVID kids. So these were the kids that were, shut out, put at home, and that were failed from the top down, from the medical bureaucracy all the way down to the parents. And there was a young man in the classroom that could not write his name. He literally was illiterate. If you told him a sentence, the cat walked across the street, he was asking my brother where the H goes in the word the, where does the A go in the word cat? Like he just had no perception of phonetic structure, how to write sentences. He had to go word letter by letter, verbatim, and help him through that. And even then, he was still lost. And this is a 14-year-old young man. So my thing is this: where does a 14-year-old find the time in this society with TikTok and all the crazy things going on? Where does a 14-year-old, 15-year-old find the time to learn how to read? Where do they find the time to buckle down and actually go back 10 years and get the things that they lost? So what I was thinking about and what
We're
was so
setting him
sad to
up
me.
for failure.
They are setting him up for failure. And I was wondering where will he be in 5 years? Where will he be in 2 years? And that's what we're seeing in our streets. That's why the crime is so high. That's why there's so much destitution, because no one knows, we think about it, but no one really knows what happens to these kids. But honestly, when you look out in the streets, you can find out exactly what happened. And it's very unfortunate.
It is. And then we not only do we have this whole education, learning, all those, and now we've got DEI in the school, and the school, they're just becoming the public school, an indoctrination camp, with all of the ideology and all of the secret discussions, and those classes, and they're putting in all kinds of historical inaccuracies. They're putting in all kinds of agendas. They're putting in things that just have nothing to do with education. Kids can't read or write, but they're trying to figure out how to, deal with gender and all this stuff in the school. And it's just not a place for that to be. Was the DEI creeping in when you were there?
Oh, the DEI, it was pervasive. It was in almost everything at every level. And I talk a lot about Hillcrest, but also a lot of my experiences came from Tinley Park High School, which, is 6 minutes down the road, but it's a predominantly white high school. But it still had the exact same challenges. I remember I was sitting in a classroom one day, and a group of young men came in, and I'd had them before in the same class, and they decided that they didn't want to sit in their desks. They had these like comfortable chairs lined up on the side of the room for them. So they wanted to sit in one of the comfortable chairs. So the first time I had that class, I didn't know, so I allowed them to do that. And they just sat over there and just sort of clown the entire time. So the second time I had this class, I was like, oh, this is not going on today. I know the game. So as soon as I got there at around
Mean, that's a
7:40.
struggle for you to come
Oh,
in and try to right the ship, It's like,
yeah.
come on.
It is. So I got there about 7:45, so maybe 15 minutes before the school day began, and I went straight to those chairs, stacked them up, put them behind my desk. I said, no one is sitting in these chairs today. They're going to be in the desk. We're learning today. So the kids come into the classroom and it's business as usual. And then this group of young men, young black men come in and they're looking for their seats. He comes in, he's saying, all crazy, where's my chair? Where's my chair? And then he sees it behind my desk. He said, excuse me, can you hand me that chair? I said, no, we're not doing that today. I need you to sit in the desk and we're going to do some learning today. He gets mad, he starts swearing and just flies out of the classroom. And I said, you know what? That's fine. You have an attitude like that, I don't want you in my class. You don't want to be in my class, I
Right,
don't
because you
want.
ruin it for everyone else that
Yes,
could possibly want
absolutely.
to learn. And that kind of breeds in the classroom. I know that you don't want a troublemaker making everyone else kind of, set them off.
Exactly. And that's what I didn't want. So he flew out of the class. I took attendance. I marked him absent, and there was not a problem. And then the next thing I know, I just had this inkling, like in my intuition, it said, go back and look at that roster again. So I open up my computer, I look into the roster, and sure enough, he had been marked from absent to present. So I was like, oh no. And I marked him as absent again. Then about 2 seconds later, I get a knock on the door from a dean, and she tells me that he's been taken to the reset room or whatever they call it now. They don't call it detention anymore. They call it like the reset room or the pride room. He's been taken there because he was having issues, and in order to de-escalate and to make sure the children don't feel uncomfortable, to validate their feelings, they're going to take them out of the classroom and they'll put them there to make sure there's not an issue. So, I was upset, and she never introduced herself to me. I didn't know who this lady was. So when I wrote up the official report later, I said a staff member came in and changed his attendance and told me that he was going to be taken to a safe space, essentially. And when I wrote that, she was more upset with the fact that I wrote a staff member because she felt like she was being disrespected because I didn't know that she was some dean. And she was like, "Well, you said a staff member. I feel like, I don't like the way that was worded. Do you have a problem with me?" And I was saying, "Well, first of all, you did not, when you came in the room, you did not even let me know who you were. I was new there at the time. I said, you didn't introduce yourself. You just came in and changed his attendance. You didn't even confer with me. And I
Wow.
mean, how was I supposed to feel about that?" So from that
Yeah,
moment
there's a
on,
major breakdown here.
oh yeah, so from that moment on, I had issues with that dean, and her and I talk about her in the book. I don't have very polite things to say about her in the book, but from that point on, me and this dean at Tinley Park High School, we never got along after that.
And what you're seeing, this is happening in schools everywhere. This is really happening in schools everywhere. Frustrated administration, they've lost their way. Teachers trying to teach, they can't. They're not even given the tools or the option. And a generation that is got a, more challenges than any of us could ever think of. What are some things or some policies? I think you also even talk about the fact that, like Vail Victorian, all of these beautiful opportunities to strive for are even being changed, right? Because it's just the culture doesn't look at that as admirable anymore.
No, not at all. So, since there's no meritocracy or anything like that, the students, they don't strive. They don't strive for anything. And I believe that out on the East Coast, there was a situation in Virginia where they were taking away valedictorian. They were taking away like all of those esteemed positions because they didn't want to hurt the feelings of the children who did
Oh,
not
yeah.
achieve. So that was a huge story. That came out, and I thought that was so sad. I was never valedictorian. I never, I was never that academically astute to achieve that. But I always thought that was something great that if you achieve that, good for you. I never was jealous of that person, but they decided to
No.
take that away.
And it's a bummer too, that person that did achieve it, they don't get the chance to
They don't.
celebrate it. Because it's something to be number one or even number two, celebratory. I mean, these achievements, by worrying about everybody else's feelings, what about the feelings of the people that have strived and have achieved? I mean, we're seeing this in the sports arena. We're seeing this in all areas. What about the people that do try and do? One, they should be inspiring others. And
They
then two,
should
there
be.
shouldn't be a jealousy. And, feelings hurt. That's how it is. You can't, you, if you don't make it, you don't win. So let's talk about some of the things that you would like to see policies, parental rights legislation. I mean, we've got all kinds of things. We've got the Department of Education abolishing. What do you think about some of these things, and what are some of the things you'd like to see?
Okay, well, one of the things
How
I would
can we
like to
help?
all
What do
right.
we do? What do we
Well,
do?
I think that parents need to be proactive. They need to understand that they do have rights. There's something called the Protecting Pupils' Rights Amendment that gives parents the ability to actually go into schools and demand to see curriculum. I think a lot of parents don't know their rights, and the school districts, of course, aren't going to tell you your rights, so they're going to take advantage of your ignorance. So I think that parents need to be proactive. They need to understand that there is no one's going to come riding in
That's right.
on a white horse to save your children. You are your child's last best advocate. Get into groups. There's safety in numbers. Get into groups. Get some strong men with you and go up to the school and demand. Do not let them intimidate you because they will do that. They love to intimidate. And just from maybe a legislative or a federal, I should say, a federal perspective, I would love to see the abolition of the Department of Education. I think that it has destroyed education as we know it in America. And I think COVID,
Such
it's been doing
bureaucracy, yeah.
so much
I mean,
bureaucracy.
it's doing a great job, dismantling it piece by piece. And I think we'll get there.
Yeah, me too. And I think it's been messed up for many years, but I think COVID really exposed just how bad it was.
Sure did.
So I think that it needs to be returned to the state levels. Unfortunately, there are some states that will codify certain things, like Illinois. Our schools are probably, are probably just doomed until we get new state government. But there
Yeah.
are many more common sense states that will protect the children. And also, I think that as far as the truancy rates go, because they are very, very high, and I get into this in the back of my book, I think that certain states need to make sure that they are tethering welfare benefits to attendance. So if your child doesn't show up in X amount of days, guess what? You may not be getting your government assistance that week. I think that if we start hitting these parents where it hurts in their pockets, it will wake them up and make them step into that parental role. And I think that there's a direct line between truancy and the crime in the streets. I think that the 16-year-old kid knocking a grandmother in her head, stealing her purse, is the same 16-year-old kid that is chronically absent every Friday from their school. So I think that
Good point.
there's some policy right there that we need to get into. And also, just to reiterate what I said earlier, I think it all goes back to parents being more proactive.
Yeah, sure does.
Absolutely.
And we are the greatest influence in our kids' lives, and parenting isn't easy. There is not a moment off. There is not a second off. I get it. It's not easy. It's tough. It's extremely tough. You know, we talk so much about parenting, giving moms the tools that they need from social media to how to raise patriotic, faith-filled children that love, you know, God, family, country. I mean, these are all things that are just, you have to be about this business all the time, at the kitchen table, in their bedroom in the evening when you pray with them and you put them to bed. I mean, it is a lot to do. And that's why here at Moms for America, we try to help on all of these subject matters because it's all a unit. You know, you're the CEO of this incredible
Yes.
place called home and being mom
Yeah.
and dads too. So we do really try to help and encourage our moms. And we're also, you know, another thing I want to mention, Gina, is that we're working to have school board ambassadors at all our 13,000 schools across districts across the 13,000 di school districts across the country. And then we would have an ambassador there that would hold that school board accountable and they would review and help provide important information to moms that are in that school district. Because a lot of people have to take advantage of the public school system and it's
Yes,
failing.
it is.
So we have to help them as much as we can. Some closing thoughts from you, sir.
Closing thoughts for me, I think that I really do believe that the education system as it stands in America right now, I don't think that that it can be saved the way that it's structured. I do believe that
Yeah.
once
Oof.
once we rout the Department of Education and return the power back to the states, that I think that that will give the people a chance to make their voices heard on the state level, to rally and say, okay, this is what we want. And I just believe that parents, you have to watch these schools that you have your children in. This isn't a Chicago thing. This isn't a black thing. This isn't a white thing. This is everywhere. It's pervasive. I worked in black schools. I worked in white schools. I worked in Hispanic schools. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
You need to understand these people are out there and they're coming for your children. They are. And if you don't stand up, if you don't, if you're not the eyes and ears, if you don't step into that role as a parent, someone else or something else will fill that void, and it's not going to be good. And it's going to be very terrifying for our country.
Yeah. Well, thanks for being a voice. I could see why you ran for office. I'm sure God's got big plans for you, Gino. Keep sharing the truth. Keep being the light. And that's for all of us. We have to share the truth. We have to be the light. And then we band together and we help one another here at Moms America, here through you speaking around the state and doing podcasts and your book. We're all here to make America better because America is the greatest country in the world. And I
Man.
think sometimes we so forget that our
Yes.
kids have the opportunity to live in the greatest land and have the American dream, you know, just dangling in front of them. They got to work hard. They have to, you know, strive. And we've got to bring that back of excellence. So thanks for your word and thanks for your truth.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. God bless you all, and God bless America.
All right, well, thanks again, Gino, for sharing your experiences. Sometimes we just got to know. We have to know what's happening behind those walls in the schools. And I just take this as a warning. and moms need to know. So thank you, Gina, for sharing your experiences and some great advice and hope for our education system. All right, moms, thank you for joining us too. I so appreciate you joining us every week here at Moms for America. And again, just remind you that we have incredible resources to support you and your kids in your journey as a mom, from patriotism to screen time to fentanyl to everything that you can imagine. We have already for you as a mom. You go to momsforamerica.us and join the movement. We always say this, it's from parental rights to public policy, from the kitchen table to Congress, we have it all. All right, moms, thank you so much for joining us. And as always, let's keep changing our country one home at a time. And I'll see you next week. God bless. A special thank you to our sponsor, the Herzog Foundation. The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of the Herzog Foundation.